with us today is Jose.
Hello, everybody.
And Trevor.
Hello.
So let's kick things off with what we have been playing. So why don't you start off with us, Jose, and let us know what you've been up to.
Been busy playing mostly driving games, going behind the wheel in Driver San Francisco. We just reviewed that. I could say that it's a pretty decent game. It's probably worth renting first before buying if you really want to try it out. The handling in it is a little slick for a lot of the cars, actually. More notably, the faster cars.
Well, is there any games out, well, driving games specifically out there that you've been playing that is a little more to your liking?
I honestly prefer Burnout Paradise a little bit more, just because you have like a set of cars that are like the fast cars or the power cars, and the power cars have a little bit harder time turning around the tight corners and everything, but they have power behind them, so you could just ram the other cars right off the road. The faster cars, that's what they are. They're speed, and they can drift to it 100 miles an hour around really tight corners and everything.
All right, so what else have you been playing?
And I've been playing, well, I mentioned Burnout Paradise, and I think the opposite of that is the other one that I've been playing is Gran Turismo 5, which is more like where Burnout's the arcade style, Gran Turismo 5's like the realistic style, and it says right on the box, the real driving simulator, and that's kind of what it is when I play it. I'm thinking, you know, all the cars handle like they would in real life, and I don't know how to drift at 100 miles an hour, but these cars, you have to slow down when you're coming to a turn and accelerate coming out of that turn, and it's just so specific about how a car handles that I get a sense that it's real driving.
You know, to go back to Burnout Paradise for a second, that's been out for a while. I mean, what prompted you to pick that up?
I had it for a while. I think it was one of the first games that I actually bought 2 years ago when I first got the PS3. And I played, what was it? Burnout Revenge, I think, on the PS2. And I thought, I had a lot of fun with that. So when I saw Burnout Paradise, I'm like, oh, I'll give this a try. And then, lo and behold, I got addicted to it. I'm just crashing into other cars at 100 miles an hour, even if I yelling at the screen if I just clipped another car, oncoming car, and it just slows down everything, and I'm getting, well, I'm yelling at the TV, I just clipped that car.
So of all the racing games you've been playing, which one is your favorite?
As much as I like Burnout Paradise, I think I like Gran Turismo. I think I like those both about the same, only because Gran Turismo has like the real cars. Burnout doesn't have any like real cars behind it. It doesn't have Ford or Chevy or anything like that. It's got like Carson and I think Nakamura and Jansen and like fake ones that they made up. But when I saw, I'm looking through all the cars in Burnout, or not Burnout, but what is it? Gran Turismo 5. I saw a 1970 Chevy Impala or something like that. Or a Corvette, actually. And I'm thinking, wow, I want to drive that in real life.
All right, very nice, very nice. So what about you, Trevor? What have you been up to?
Well, I really haven't. The past 2 or 3 days, I had my wisdom teeth out this week.
Oh.
So I've sort of been down and out and drugged pretty heavily. I'm not complaining at all.
That should add to the experience.
Yes. When I did play something, it was very psychedelic and out there. But what I was playing right before I went in and had, you know, four parts of me ripped out was Dead Island, pretty new title. The way I would explain it is a cross between Fallout and Dead Rising. It sort of has the same dynamics, endless hordes of zombies, very interesting weapons that can be modded. A bat can become a nail bat, or you can add a poison component to some weapon. And it's predominantly a melee game, at least the part that I'm in. So you spend most of the time just bashing zombies to death, like knocking, cutting their arms off with a machete or bashing their brains in. And, you know, you kill one, and your guy actually gets exhausted, and you have like an exhaustion meter. And he's just like, like panting for his life. And you can hear the zombies just coming up behind you, flip around, you start beating them. If you get too exhausted, you eventually can't fight anymore. And they just surround you. So it has a very interesting realistic component to it. My ultimate favorite part of the game is driving. You can jump into a pickup truck and just run down zombies to your heart's desire. And I just drive all over the place, just running zombies over. So very exciting game, very good, you know, like post-apocalyptic zombie style game. But that's been consuming my time and kind of on and off and playing, some simulation games like Sims 3 and Tropico 4 is another one I've been playing for a couple weeks.
Also, going back to Dead Island, how do you think all that first-person combat works for this game?
Minus the fact that the company sent out a patch that wiped out millions of people's saved games, I think it's working out really well. Yeah, so I sort of played the whole game and then updated to the recent patch, and then I lost it and had to start all the way back from the beginning. But I wasn't alone. I think, is Dead Island Bethesda?
No.
It's not, because I thought I read that they should be, because the way they do patching and how buggy the game is, they would fit right in over at Bethesda. No, I think it's working out really well. I don't miss the third person component necessarily, like from Dead Space, or can't really think of another good example, but that's really closest example I can think of. I really do like the close combat you have. I like that. I keep hearing about, oh, you need to get a gun, you need to get a gun. But there are no guns in the freaking game. At least I can't find one anywhere. And I just keep finding, like, more and more bats bats and wrenches. And they all have, like, really weird names, like Flimsy Knife. Okay, well, that doesn't sound very good. It's flimsy. And then you'll find a wrench. It's like Trusty Wrench. Like, oh, I bet this is pretty good. But the more you use the weapons, the more they actually degrade and break down, and then you have to go to a workbench and repair them. So you have to be very skillful with what weapon you use and you know, when you use it. You actually have a throwing ability where you can throw weapons. So like, the best thing is if there's a zombie running at you, you throw a knife into his chest or his head or his leg, and then that slows him down, and then you just run at him like ape crazy, you know, beat the crap out of him until he's dead. And then you pick up your knife and throw it at the next one. So, yeah, it's working out, to answer your question.
So how did you feel the settings of Dead Island contributed to the game? Do you think it worked with it, or do you think it worked against it?
Like the environment?
Right.
I think it works for it. You're on an isolated island, Benoy, I think is the name of it. Pretty much, there are very few survivors, but there are survivors. I like it when there are actually people to interact with, because there would be survivors in a real situation. At least we hope there would be. You know, there'd be the weirdos in the mall trying to survive. Mm-hmm. Like Dawn of the Dead. And you sort of have that kind of feeling, like you're, you know, running through a bunch of zombies, or you're basically in like you're on a resort island. There are bungalows everywhere. There's two major hotels. And there's zombies concentrated in certain areas. And they keep sending you to areas where they are. Like, oh man, I don't want to have to send you there, but we really need some food. So then you have to go there and you pick up truck and pick up juice or pick up gasoline, and you end up getting attacked and then going back to the safe place. But you have that safe place to go to where the people are. So it's really cool. But my favorite thing is I'll be out in the bungalows and I'll bash in a door. You actually have this thing where you push the mouse forward and you push the mouse back, and you can break a door open, sort of like a lockpick function. And when you go in, there might be people hiding in there. And they're like, what's going on out there? We're scared. And then that starts a new mission. So it's sort of like Dead Rising, where you're constantly running into people and just picking up more and more missions. So you have like 20 missions.
Well, now you've been playing more simulation games, you say. Has your impressions changed on any of the games you've been playing, or no?
No. Well, I just started playing Sims 3 again. I've always been a Sims fan since I was younger. And, you know, there's nothing like being able to control and ruin people's lives. but The Sims 3, really, there were a lot of expansions that I didn't have, or I had them and I hadn't played them. So I installed them and I thought, you know, I really like The Sims 2. Sims 3, I didn't really like some of the new jobs they added. And they kind of made it a little hokey. But I put a bunch of the expansions on, and I don't know, it's very interesting. It's kind of realistic. I'm playing the Generations expansion, which is basically every time you do something significant in the game, it takes a snapshot of it and puts it in an album. So when your Sims get older, they can reminisce and look through an album of their past experiences and feel good about themselves. And then, like, 10 generations down the road, you can have pictures and books for all the families. So they're trying to make it more and more like real families. And, like, you know, people die, but you can remember them now.
Have you noticed any significant changes to Sim 3 since the beginning to this most recent expansion?
Except for the drive towards more realism, definitely. There are a lot of features that are missing in Sims 3 that were in Sims 2. And I find that Sims 2 is much more realistic. But there's sort of the way they do things is piecemeal. Each expansion adds new functionality. But I remember specifically in Sims 2, when my Sim came home from school or work, wherever he went, he would say hello to his family. Like, he'd come in and he would do kind of like a cool, he'd point his fingers and say, skadoosh, and then he'd run up the stairs. And it's like, that was awesome. But now they kind of just walk in lackadaisically. They don't give a crap. Their family's sitting there, and they just go and do their business. It's sort of like the modern American family, right?
Yeah.
You know, dinner in your room, and nobody sees each other. I don't know. There were interesting things. Like, the new expansion added a rebellious trait, so teenagers can be rebellious. They can booby trap things, and you know, so parents getting sprayed in the face by faucets, and you know, or they're getting their hair dyed in the shower or something. It's very interesting, and that's something that's different in Sims 3. They have traits, and people, you know, people can be rebellious. People can have a green thumb, or they can be lucky, and I don't know. It has its merits.
All right, so I'll get into a little bit of what I have been up to. I have been playing a lot of the God of War Origins collection. I finished Chains of Olympus probably a week ago or so, and from a week ago till now, I've been playing Ghost of Sparta. It's a really interesting collection, especially since you consider that it came from the PSP. You know, the PSP itself doesn't have the amount of buttons that a PS3 controller has, so they had to do some tweaking with the controls, but they managed to get it just, you know, the exact place where God of War 3 was as far as control schemes is concerned. You know, so they implemented all the right stick functions, and they even left in some of the original PSP functions for those that were playing it on the PSP and wanted to move over, or, you know, vice versa.
Does it port well? Is like, how does the HD look as far as like the overall environment and Kratos himself?
Well, in Chains of Olympus, it came out right around right around God of War 2. So it kind of looks like a God of War 1, you know, like the God of War 1 game.
Right.
Graphics are, obviously it's a lot more brighter. It's like, there's more lighting effects going on. Textures are a lot smoother. You know, everything looks better, but it still kind of looks like God of War 1. If you were to go to the first God of War collection where they redid God of War 1 and 2 for the PS3, it looks a lot like the God of War 1 off of that collection. But, you know, for those that haven't played that, it looks good. It's smooth. You know, the graphics are good, but they're not up to snuff. But when you move over to Ghost of Sparta, it looks excellent. It looks like God of War 3.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it looks awesome. I mean, it doesn't have the big expansive environments that God of War 3 had, you know, where they would do those shots where they would pan all the way out, and it looks like you were looking at Kratos from, like, you know, a half a mile away. But as far as, like, textures and everything else goes, you know, it looks amazing. And, you know, on its own, you would never know that you were playing a PSP game. You know, you'd never know. So they did a really good job with that. And it's really cool that they're expanding these games to a new audience. I mean, people, not everybody has a PSP. But now, you know, everybody that has a PS3 or a PSP can play these games now.
Yeah, I'm probably going to be asking that for the holiday this year.
Oh, yeah. And I'm sure by then the price is going to drop like crazy. I mean, you could already get it for, you know, $25 or $30 now. So by the holiday, I'm sure that's going to go on sale. But yeah, it's certainly worth picking up, and it's certainly worth your time. And for all those people out there that are trophy collectors, you'll have a bunch of trophies at your disposal. You know, each game has full trophy support.
So. I'm just gonna plan a week of just going through them all in chronological order.
Yeah, you should probably set aside about 60 hours, but it's time well spent. It's a lot of fun, and a lot of things carry over from game to game. So, like, you'll never know what you need to do. It'll always be presented to you, and you'll know just from playing these games like what you got to do. I've also been playing Rochard, which is a PSN exclusive title. Follows the story of a guy named John Rochard, who's a space miner, and he's on this rock, and they've been having trouble. And just when, Central Command is about to close down his operation, they find something on this asteroid, and they get reinstated, and they gotta go and investigate as to what's been going on. But this game's like a platformer puzzle-solving adventure, very similar to the Metroid games and the Castlevania games. They even coined the phrase Metroidvania, and they describe this game to people that are looking to buy it. The only thing that really means is that, it's a 2D side-scrolling platformer, jump from ledge to ledge, and you'll collect items that help unlock things further down the scroll. It's pretty simple in that respect, but it does some interesting things that other games don't really do, where they have these different barriers that some barriers you can't pass through, but metal objects can. Other things, metal objects can pass through, but you can't. And there's other ones where, bullets can't go through, but everything else can. So, you have to do a little bit of thinking here and there. But it's pretty interesting, and it's a really good game.
How much is that on the, what is it, PSN?
Yeah, the PSN, it's $10.
$10?
So it's pretty affordable, especially the recent trend that Xbox has been setting up for people where everything costs $15. It's a good deal, for those that have some extra PSN dollars floating around.
Well, I heard, I just read in an article that the PSN, if you spend $60 in October, you're going to get $10 back for November.
Yeah, I would certainly suggest picking it up for $10, especially if it's going to be free, for that $60 deal.
Yeah.
So that's always an option. And last but not least, I've been playing some Battlefield 3 beta. It is just a multiplayer beta like most people should have access to at this point. But, it's good. It's a good game. It's not drastically different than any other Battlefield game, but it is Battlefield after all, so you should kind of expect some similarities. The game looks good. I think it's going to look better, especially for the single player, but for multiplayer, it's pretty much on par with console versions of Bad Company 2. It plays exactly the same. Rush mode works exactly the same, and that's the mode that I've played the most. You just go to certain points on the map and hold it, and once you hold it for a certain amount of time, you move to the next set of points. Otherwise, if the defending team keeps killing you before you can hold it, the defending team will win. Very simple mode, but it works pretty well. The map that they give you is, I believe, Paris, where it's this urban setting, and you start off in a park kind of setting, and you do some battling there, and when you go to your next set of points, it's in a subway station. So those two environments vary pretty greatly for just that. But it's good, and it's free. So if you had any questions about how Battlefield 3 was going to look and play and feel on the consoles, This was definitely the way to check it out. It is a limited time beta, so you should get on it if you haven't already. Certainly take a look and enjoy. I think it's pretty good, and I think it'll live up to the hype. There's still a lot of questions as to how this is going to look and feel, single player wise, and how it's going to look and react on the PC. But for those that are interested, it's up and it's there. Let me just pose a couple of questions to you guys. Now we're starting to get into a lot of new releases, like major releases coming out soon. So What have you been looking forward to, Jose?
Personally, Arkham City is probably one of the big ones. I'm really looking forward to that one just because it's that follow up from the, how do you follow that up from Arkham Asylum to Arkham City? And then I just read today that it might not be the end, but we don't really know for sure. As far as that and like fighting all the bad guys as Batman, you got Solomon Grundy that was announced, Penguin, Joker might be, I think Joker's in there, I'm blanking on some of the other names here. And another big one I'm really looking forward to is WWE 12, just because I'm looking through all the changes, and it's not SmackDown versus Raw anymore because they said they wanted to start all new, and they basically looked under the hood and took out all the old parts and then put new ones in. And they tried to showcase that the animations aren't as stiff anymore, and guys aren't. If you put a guy near the ropes and you get, like, if you're The Rock, for example, if you slam a guy near the ropes, he's not going to morph into the ring when you set him up for the people's elbow. He's going to do it where he is. And you could interrupt other guys' moves when they're doing it instead of, like, waiting for them to come back up.
So that's all you've been looking forward to?
I'm trying to think of other stuff that's, Twisted Metal, I think, but I think that got pushed back.
Yeah, that's coming out in 2012.
Yeah. I can't really think. What's the other one that we have? On, my brother pre-ordered this one. Saints Row 3.
Oh, okay.
And we got the special edition, that $100 one, which coming with all the pre-order stuff. And I think they said that it's coming with headphones by Beats by Dre or something like that.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, wow, that's pretty good. You get the game and, from what I hear, a pretty good set of headphones. The only problem is you can't use those for the system itself. And I thought, oh, that sucks, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a pretty nice pre-order bonus if there was one. So what about you, Trevor? What have you been looking forward to?
Just the few that I've come across recently that look really interesting. So a lot of the games that I'm playing now were the games that I was looking forward to, like Dead Island and things like that. But Syndicate looks really interesting, the reboot of the old futuristic franchise there.
Mm-hmm.
That looks very interesting to me. I've been posting, you know, we posted the trailer for it and been looking at some screenshots for it. It's just a nice, you know, slice of how horrible the future could be, with multinational corporations basically ruling the world and fighting each other with nanobot soldiers, or I don't even know. Maybe the better way to put it is, you know, each corporation has an agent and each one has a chip inside their brain and they have certain abilities. So it's really, it reminds me actually a lot of Deus Ex series, sort of like the, you know, building on mankind with machines and nanotechnology and that kind of thing. And I never played Syndicate in the past, so I'm just going off what I'm seeing, but I'm definitely looking forward to that. Another series that I've never been into, and I tried to get into it, was the Elder Scrolls series. Elder Scrolls Skyrim looks really, really good. And after viewing the 20-minute gameplay footage that came out a couple weeks ago and checking out the trailer for it, Skyrim really looks like it's going to be... It almost reminds me of Fallout in a way, and I understand they're both Bethesda, but you know, anything similar to Fallout is going to pique my interest because it's one of my favorite titles. But it really does seem like something that might actually get me into the series. Because Oblivion, for me, I tried to play Oblivion and I was bored to hell with it, and I know other people loved it to death. It's like a cult classic, so hopefully, you know, Skyrim's a title for me. So those are really the only two that are coming up in my head right now.
I'm definitely looking forward to Skyrim, like you said. It's going to be the biggest game of the year, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since it's been a while since Elder Scrolls has been released. Well, you know, Oblivion.
Oblivion was the last one.
Yeah, so it's been a while since that's been released. But definitely looking forward to that. Definitely looking forward to Batman Arkham City. I definitely like all the stuff they did with Arkham Asylum, especially with the control scheme and everything like that. So it should be pretty awesome, whatever they plan to do with that. I do agree that Syndicate looks pretty interesting too, especially since that they're changing directions on that game, like almost completely. You know, what used to be the 2D thing goes into a first person mm-hmm. shooter. So just that alone is like an entirely new retake yeah. of what's been going on. So
completely revamped. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. So it should be pretty cool to see what, you know, they had in store for that series. But, yeah, you guys pretty much covered what I was looking forward to also. So we'll just take that and move on to our first break. So stick around and we'll be back shortly. Topic of the podcast, and that is what I am calling the next generation of gaming, which what I'm specifically referring to is all the ports and remakes that have been coming out recently. It seems that the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360 have quote unquote maxed out, or you know, the best looking games for the system have come out or are already in the process of coming out. And the only way to keep players interested in this old technology is to release ports and remakes of games that they've enjoyed beforehand. We've seen this in a number of applications, from God of War and both God of War 1 and 2, which was on the PlayStation 2, being remastered and redone for the PlayStation 3, as well as the other two PSP God of War titles, like Chains of Olympus and Ghost of Sparta, being redone and remastered. Why don't you start us off, Jose, and let us know how you feel about these ports and remakes.
Personally, I'm kind of indifferent to them, because I love playing new experience games, like new experiences with new games and like different titles, and something like with an original instead of like a 2 or 3 or anything like that. I mean, don't get me wrong, I like the sequels that come out every once in a while, but if you give me something new that I could play, then I'm all for that. With the remakes, it feels like I've been there and I've done that. I already know what that's like. If I wanted to play God of War, for example, I got the collection last Christmas, and it took me a while to really warm up to it, because I'm just kind of playing all the other stuff that I had around, and I'm thinking, well, maybe I'll give it a shot. And then when I finally played it, I'm like, okay, the first God of War was so drastically different as far as the controls, because I think you have to press L1 or something to open doors and chests and everything. You have to keep tapping it. I'm like, oh, wait, it's not circle anymore. It's not hold this down anymore. But when I finally got into that, I'm like, okay, well, it was nice revisiting, but I'd rather be on something that I have now that instead of, like, revisiting.
So did the updated graphics do anything for you specifically? Or?
Oh, yeah. The first one, it kind of looked real smooth and everything, and I was quoting along with it, and just, like, the gods of Olympus have abandoned me. And, like, from that moment on to, like, the final scene when he's, like, the god of war and everything, I thought, it was nice going through that and, it like, being on that big screen and going through all the emotions of getting killed again and going through hell and killing Ares. And then in God of War 2, like going through getting killed again by Zeus and getting out of hell again and going to the Sisters of Fate. And I even have a point saved up, I think before, right before Clotho, that gauntlet, right, that hallway, all of enemies just saved up. If I'm having a bad day, I have it saved up to that point and just like slaughter everything. And it's just like, okay, all the stress from the day is gone now just because of that.
Did seeing that scene in HD add to the feelings you had when you played it originally in standard definition?
A little bit. A little bit. It was like seeing it in HD is one thing, and then when you go back to the standard def, it doesn't take away from the overall gaming experience, but seeing it in HD just kind of like it pops out, and you see every little nuance and every little like it, all the things that they polished up, and it looks a lot better, and it doesn't look as, I guess, blocky, I guess.
So hold that thought for a second, and let's move over to you, Trevor. How do you feel about these new games coming out for these systems?
For me, the most important thing of a game is its story. And if the story is retained and not, you know, predominantly changed by remaking, I love it. Like right now I'm playing the remake of Resident Evil 1 on the GameCube. Now, I played the original Resident Evil 1. The graphics were not that good. And a lot of people might say, oh, well, you know, that's how it should be. It should stay the way it is. It's a classic title. But for me, I look at it as it's introducing, and obviously GameCube's not new anymore, but when it first came out, it introduced a new audience to a great, great storyline. So if they were playing Nemesis, Resident Evil 3 Nemesis at the time, or they were playing Resident Evil 4 at the time, they could actually go back and see the original story on the platform they're playing. So it's sort of, it increases the marketplace. It allows more people to play it. So a lot of people aren't going to go back and buy an old PlayStation anymore. People aren't going back and buying old PS2s anymore. People are gearing up for PS4 and they're gearing up for the next Xbox. So really, I think it's a great thing. I think it's a good way to keep the titles alive. And it's sort of like, you know, every kid for the past 20 years watches Barney in the morning, and they or Sesame Street. They're keeping it alive for the next generation. So I don't have a problem with remakes. Now, ports I think are great. I think, you know, as a user of OnLive, cloud computing, cloud gaming, I think the game should be available on all platforms. I don't think there should be exclusivity necessarily. And I think the more platforms and the more places you can play a game, the better it is. Better it is for the market, better it is for the player. So you don't want to be limited when a title comes out. And you said that there's a limitation now, or maybe we've hit our peak. And I really haven't noticed games tipping off or slowing down. So we still do have new titles coming out. And I understand we have a lot of twos and threes and DLCs, but I think the yes with PS4 and the other, you know, the Xbox, Wii U coming out, that's natural, and they are going to start pulling back. But I think they're going to be doing ports and remakes on the next generation platforms too. I don't think it's just a unique thing right now.
I don't think that it necessarily means that there's a slowdown in gaming when they come out with ports. But they're trying to extend the life of the console by generating interest in these kinds of titles. You know, because they're trying to make money. And they're trying to, especially Sony, who's started the trend. You know, they were losing a ton of money when they started making these PS3s. And when they found out the hard way that people aren't exactly enthusiastic about, you know, paying $600 for a new console, no matter what it could do, people aren't into that. So they sold a ton of consoles at a loss. So now, you know, only recently did they break even. So they're trying to make some money back and try to, you know, get more money to pay for the research and development of a new console. You know, just from a financial standpoint. Not that they already haven't been doing that or have been thinking about a PS4, you know, a year after the PS3 was introduced. But I think it's just a phenomenon right now. We're all used to a 6-year hardware cycle. Now that these expensive consoles have finally broken even, and now they're trying to get more life out of this console, I think it's something that we'll see. And like you said, I'm sure that we will see ports and remakes on a new console, but I don't think we'll see them right off the bat. I think we'll see those ports and remakes later on in its life cycle, just like we're seeing that now.
When, yeah, obviously when Xbox 360 games become the classics.
right, exactly. I mean, we're talking 10 years from now, mm-hmm. We'll see remakes of, you know, they'll put Resident Evil 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 on a PlayStation 4 disc or something similar to that.
You'll be able to play it on PSN or something.
Yeah, exactly. Or you'll see, you know, the Dead Space collection on a PS4. But now you're a supporter of these kinds of games, but do you feel that there's any kind of exploitation going on of people? How they try to get people to buy something that they've already bought time and time again?
I don't know if that's... Do you really think that's their audience for people that already have it? Or is it new people, people who haven't experienced before? Is it a nostalgic thing, or is it, you know, tapping a new market? Like, I don't know if I agree with the premise.
Well, I would think that it's kind of a split market. I mean, you're certainly trying to... You're selling a game that's 5 or 6 years old.
Or older.
Or older. So it's not going to appeal as much to people on a cutting edge. I mean, if you're brand new to gaming, are you more likely going to buy the new hyped-up blockbuster crazy game that just came out? Mm. Or are you going to buy a collection of, you know, 2 or 3 games that came out a bunch of years ago? I think you're 50-50. So I think they have half of that, and then the people that have already bought it are going, you know, the fans of that series are going to say, well, I'm buying that day one.
I don't really think it's exploitive. For me, when I was a kid, my parents didn't buy me anything. They didn't buy me consoles. They didn't buy me any, you know, a Sega Genesis or anything like that. So my experiences of playing consoles all happened at friends' houses. And I played tons of titles and enjoyed them heavily. But I never had them. You know, I never could just pop it in at home and play it on my own. So for me, the opportunity to, you know, minus an emulator on my computer or, you know, having to download ROMs from God knows where, it gives me the opportunity to easily replay these games from my childhood that I never owned. But for someone who, you know, we're sort of in this realm where everything has to be convenient and has to be at an arm's length. Like, nobody wants to go get their Sega from their closet or the attic anymore. If they could just play it on their PSN next to God of War 3 or, you know, next to Fallout New Vegas or whatever they're playing, I think it becomes, you know, the value of it goes way up just for being convenient, because it's there now. You can have your archive, you can have your collection with the new stuff too. So that's my take on it.
All right, so what about you, Jose? Do you agree or disagree that these remakes and, you know, ports are kind of exploiting the gamers that they've already been, you know, made fans of?
I don't know if it's exploitive as much as it's like kind of reminding what the gamer had when they were playing it. Like, when I'm playing God of War, it's like it kind of reminds you of, okay, well, this is what it was like, and this is what you have to do. And, you know, I think now, especially with the enhancements like the HD and trophies, it kind of gets people to kind of play it, add that experience of getting the trophies now, if you're into the trophies now. And with the HD, it's like, okay, well, now it looks even better than it did before, because I know God of War 2 was like one of the last titles for the PS2, and it really pushed the PS2 to what it could really do. And now you look at on the PS3, and it looks really, really good now.
Right, but is that at the expense of the people that have already bought the game?
People that bought the game, they kind of, I think it reminds them of why they liked the game so much. And it just, with all the additions of it, it's like, okay, well, you're paying basically for an HD an HD and trophies for the most part. And then whatever else came with the game, I think, what was it that came with God of War 2 that I didn't get? I think there was a making of disc.
Oh yeah, the director's.
Right.
Thing.
And, yeah. Like as long as they had like little extras that you didn't get with the original game, it kind of makes you want to think, oh, okay, well, you know, as long as they're adding stuff to it, if they're giving more stuff, or even if it's like a bargain discount, like, because I think it's more about getting half of the people that did play it, and then the other half that haven't played it. Like, oh, hey, you didn't play, I don't know what's coming out, the Metal Gear Solid series. If you didn't play the original Metal Gears, then, you know, we got the new Metal Gears here for you. Like the – we got 2, 3, and – what is it? 2, 3, and Peace Walker.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're going to give you all three of those in one disc. I think it's one disc. It should be.
Yeah, I think so.
And then you get all three of those titles for one. And, like, the newer gamer that hasn't played it, oh, I get three games in one. The other ones are like, oh, I remember these games now. Let's see what they did with it. And let's see how it compares to that experience I had back then. And let's see how it looks now.
So are you more in favor of having a retail disc collection? It's like a God of War collection. Or would you rather see these things come out on the PSN?
I think with I'd rather have like something I could hold. I'd rather have like the disc itself, just because I could look at it and say, okay, well, I have that there next to the other Metal Gear Solid 4. Or if I wanted to, I could just play like what I was mentioning earlier with the God of War collection. I could play Chains and then 1 and then 2, and then what is it? Ghost of Sparta, God of War 2 and 3. Like just plan a week of that if I wanted to.
So what about you, Trevor? Are you a fan of these disc collections, or would you rather see a PSN release?
Well, that goes against the trend of streaming and, you know, downloadable content. And we're sort of moving away from having the, you know, the silver-crested collector's edition, you know, sealed in plastic, never to be opened. You know, I don't know. I think that's a dinosaur viewpoint. Like, you know, we're all just clamoring to have our discs and, you know, have our shelves full of games. So, I don't know. I don't think that's going to – that's definitely not the trend. That's not going to happen. I think that you're going to see them more and more on PSN, more and more on XBLA. It's easier for the company not to have to mass produce a 10-year-old game in a collector's edition. Yeah, if I wanted to throw down $50 or $60 for a collector's edition – you know, if I had it, then, you know, maybe I would buy it, but I don't know. I don't feel horrible that they're not making them.
So let's change gears here and move over to our second topic of the podcast, which is, difficulty in gaming. I don't know how many of you are old school gamers or not, but back when the Nintendo was the console of choice, games were distinctly harder. And if you go even further back to the Atari 2600, games were just score chases. There was no story. There was no nothing. It's how many blips can you shoot and what kind of score you can get. And that style of gaming just brought about just difficulty in general. And there have been series that have been released that have been notorious for being extremely difficult, such as Mega Man, or, you know, even under certain circumstances, Mario Brothers. I mean, Mario Brothers 1 was a pretty difficult game.
Yeah, it was.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, that gives me nightmares thinking about how hard of a time I really had compared to when my 6-year-old self playing it versus how easy of a time I had now, knowing the little secrets about it.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that was the only way that American children could win those games, is just with those little tips and tricks that were built into the game to make it a little easier, you know. But nowadays, all the games that are coming out now are pretty easy. And, you know, even the toughest games are not that tough at all. But recently we have seen a resurgence in difficult games, like, especially with the critical acclaim that has been surrounding the Demon's Souls series, you know, games that have just been brutally difficult from the second you pick them up to the second you put them down. And, you know, people have been really enjoying that. So what about you, Jose? How do you feel about this trend in difficult gaming?
Angry. No, I do get frustrated at parts when I'm having trouble, and I just want to throw the controller, but knowing that it's a $60 controller, I kind of have a little restraint and just, like, punch a pillow, or, like, I'll get my brother and just, like, punch him in the stomach a little bit. And if I play a difficult game, I know I'm just gonna have so much frustration with it. Because even playing Infamous 2 on hard, that first 5 minutes I died right away, and I thought, what the hell? How the hell did it get this hard? And then I had to rewire everything in my head. Like, okay, they're taking more damage, I'm taking less, so the roles are a little reversed here. So I'm playing it, and I'm thinking, okay, I gotta stay near a pole or like a lighting pole or some emergency, just to have some backup somewhere. And I'm thinking, I'm yelling at the screen. I'm yell at the TV a lot, and I don't think I could, like, my body could really handle all that much more anger toward a difficult game.
So what about you, Trevor? How do you feel about this trend?
Well, you know, I like to be able to finish a game, and I really find like a certain level of satisfaction in being able to finish a game. And the harder the game is, the longer it is, it's sort of, you know, the likelihood that I'm going to stop playing it for a while. I have noticed, I'm you know, trying to think of all the games that I've played that really aren't that hard, but that were enjoyable. The Half-Life series, Half-Life 2, all those games were not hard at all. You know, the Fallout series, even on hardcore, were very easy. It's very hard to go back and, like, Gears of War, extremely easy games, except, you know, if you're on the hardest level, that's sometimes hard. And I guess most games, when you do click the harder levels, it's really just hit points, like the amount of times you can be hit or how hard it is to kill the enemy. It doesn't really change too many, you know, it doesn't change the storyline, it doesn't really tweak the game too much. It just tweaks those factors I mentioned. So, like, would I want a game to be harder? I think it really depends. It depends on the game. For me, I play a lot of psychological thrillers, like Silent Hills or Dead Space games. And I think those games became any harder than they are, like right now the games have fear going for them and terror, like you're afraid to keep pushing forward, and I think fear alone is enough for me in those games. And if it was really hard, then I think it would make it a little bit less enjoyable. But I hate it when you have to shoot something 20 times and the friggin' thing doesn't go down, or one of those games where they just keep getting back up. It's like, just die, you're good to shoot 2 or 3 times and you're dead. I'm conflicted on it. Like I said, you know, if it's a shooter, I want to just shoot and kill things, and I don't want to take forever. But if it's a psychological thriller, I don't know. I expect it to be a little hard.
All right, so let me pose this question to you, Jose. Do you think that the art of challenge is lost on this console's generation of gamers?
I think it's more about finding that sweet spot between having that difficulty of almost to frustration where you keep on dying, but you want to keep pressing forward because you know, I was so close this time, I think I could do it. And finding that level of ease where you feel like you're accomplishing something. And with a lot of titles now, I think, what was it? God of War 3 kind of gave that to me, because it was, especially during the first part of the Zeus battle, where you're on like that 2D platform or the little bridge part, and it took me forever. It took me an hour just to get past that one part, and once I got through that, I'm like, okay, that I think I should have an easier time. And then once I got through that, I kind of felt like that payoff of the very end when you're pressing circle to where Kratos is just beating him mercilessly and with his bare hands, and I'm just pressing circle for a half hour thinking, oh, this is for that bridge battle, that crappy little bridge battle, you kept me there for an hour, I'm gonna keep you here for a half hour just to spite you for that. And it's just about more about that little in between something like achievement and difficulty.
Well, for, you know, you say that you felt that kind of satisfaction after beating a difficult part, you know, but if games aren't hard anymore, don't you think that kind of takes away that feeling of accomplishment?
If it's too easy, yeah. If it gives you a little challenge, like if you keep dying, then it still has to reach that part where you want to keep pressing forward, because if it keeps killing you, you're going to want to stop playing just because you know you can't get past that one part, but if you feel something there that you have, you're doing something and you're so close every time, you feel like you're close every time, then you're going to want that, and you're going to have that feeling of satisfaction once you do get past that part.
So what about you, Trevor? Do you feel the same way about making games easier to the point where you lose those parts where you struggled at but got satisfaction afterwards when you finally beat it?
Well, I think beating the game itself has a certain level of satisfaction to it. But I do, you know, I can relate to when I was younger playing Final Fantasy games and dying 7 or 8 times in a row trying to fight a boss. And, you know, just feeling like, you know, I'm level 65, I killed every boss before this, why can't I kill this freaking boss? And usually, you know, you go to bed, you wake up in the morning, you beat him the first time you play. And you're so aggravated because you played for 3 or 4 hours the night before, and it was probably just because you were sleep deprived or anxious or, you know, delirious or something, that you couldn't actually do it. But yeah, there is a certain level of satisfaction when you actually accomplish that. And I know what you feel like. You feel like, oh, well, you know, I got past the checkpoint, I did that, the next part's going to be easier. And I guess a good game, it's not easier. You know, each new checkpoint, each new level, increases or adds a new challenge, and you go from one challenge to the next. But if you, I'm thinking of Mafia 2, for instance. Mafia 2, I played the entire game on hard, and most of the game was duck and cover. If I got shot maybe 2 or 3 times, I would be dead. And most people would probably play it on normal or probably on the normal setting, they could be shot like 6 or 7 times. And there were a couple parts where I would be hiding behind a box and I would get shot. And, you know, I would scream and yell at the TV and, you know, F word would come out of me a couple times. And you know, I would just be so angry. But I would always play. I'd always, you know, pick back up and play it again. So, yeah, I completely agree there is a certain level of satisfaction in challenges. And I do think a lot of good games, good titles, do still have that.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you guys. I think that a lot of the games today kind of cater to an audience that wants easier games, especially when they give you the decision to which mode you want to play the game on. They're really saying, well, you can make this easy or you can make this hard. Back in the Nintendo days, there was no choice. It's you play it and that this is what it is. And I think that there's something lost on that.
Yeah, I've got a question to pose to you about that. Have you noticed how a lot of games make it so you can't play the harder levels without playing a certain level first?
Yeah, I've noticed that a few times, actually.
I actually find that very aggravating, and I feel like on Dead Space, for instance, that I want to play the game on Insane, or I want to play the game on Zealot, the 2 higher levels, without having to play the game on Normal first. Now, is that what you mean, catering to what I would call like the impatient marketplace?
Well, catering is giving you the choice at all.
Giving you the choice at all, okay. But
yeah,
don't you think that should be open? Like, I feel like it should be open. I should be able to just be Insane from the beginning.
Well, yeah, I certainly think that they should give you the choice to play it on whatever difficulty you want right from the get-go.
Mm.
You know, I hate when they make you play games 2 or 3 times over. For no other reason than just difficulty. You know, I said, oh, well, you beat it on hard. Let's see if you can beat it on super hard. And it's stupid. You know, if you're going to build in a mode like that, then give me the choice to play it on that mode right from the get-go. You know, because replaying a story over and over again gets kind of boring.
And really, a lot of times you're unlocking weapons or suits or something. And there's really no added value.
Yeah, or there's, you know, there's only value for the times that you're playing the game over.
Yeah.
And especially Dead Space, they're the worst offenders because they'll give you all these cool upgrades and things when you beat the game, but then when you go to start a new one, there's no new game plus, so you don't take any of that with you. So it's completely lost.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then if you keep dying over and over again, then they'll say, oh, well, do you want to lighten up the difficulty? I'm like, no, I'm playing on this difficulty for this reason.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, again, I think that that's lost. I mean, I think that the easier that they make games, the easier that they're going to have to continue to make games. And, you know, gamers, like, what's the point of playing if there's no challenge? You know, those moments where you spend an hour, you know, battling out a boss to finally beat him and getting that feeling, I mean, it's second to none. And, you know, I think that the younger gaming generation is really missing out on some quality, you know, some quality moments like that. So this is going to bring us to the end of our program. So I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in, and I'd also like to thank our guests. So why don't you let everybody know, Trevor, how they can get a hold of you?
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter at Bago Games, or you can visit my website at www.bagogames.com.
And you can check out Jose and I on newgamernation.com. You can follow us on Twitter at newgamernation. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/newgamernations. Please make sure to check us out on iTunes and leave a review and like us on there. It really helps us out and gets the word out about the show. Also, don't forget we have an Android app which follows all the stories on the website and brings them directly to you. So if you want New Gamer Nation on the go, it is available there to you. Again, thank you everybody for tuning in. Thanks to our guests. We hope you enjoyed, and we will talk to you soon.